All right, so what we're trying to do here is assemble all the bits and pieces of stuff that we've looked at so we can put any kind of term that we want into a model. Quantitative, coded categorical, non-linear, and interactions. So study relationships between amount and difficulty of exam practice with exam performance. We've got three quantitative variables, and we're going to need to know the mean and the standard deviation for them. We're going to need the means so that we can do mean centering. And we're going to need the mean and the standard deviation when we start plotting things. Now, I did mean centering here just because I did mean centering here. Lots of people would recommend that we shift this to 6-centered because nobody has 5.8 practices. That we might say, all right, so the average prior number of prior statistics courses is 2. Nobody has 2.35. So you might pick 2 or 3, or you might just pick 2.5 so you're close to the center. And the same thing with motivation. Remember, mean centering tends to give you the least collinearity between your linear and your quadratic terms. But it also means that you're talking about an average instead of a value that you may care about. You're allowed to center these things anywhere you want to care about. Just remember that if I center this at 6 and I center this at 2, when I look at the regression weight for this, I'm learning about the people with 2 of these. And when I look at the regression weight for this, I'm learning about the people with 6 of these. And that increase in specificity, sometimes people don't really like, and that's why they still do mean centering, even though means are hardly ever representative of an individual. We then make, I don't know why this thing's staying up there. We make the quadratic terms. We have some coding to do because we have 3 different programs. And so this one is going to compare the clinical to the experimental. This is going to compare the clinical to the developmental. Yeah. Clinical with developmental. And I like the if version. Lots of people like recodes. It doesn't matter. We're going to dummy code job interest with research as the comparison group because that's the most common. And we have similar and easy here. And then we start cranking out interactions. And remember that what you're looking for is a balance between 2 things. Completeness and null flooding. If you make every possible quadratic and interaction term and wedge them in there, there's a really good chance that you're adding a lot of terms that don't do anything. And you're adding collinearity without adding variance accounted for, and that can create a lot of type 2 errors. If you have enough terms in there that don't do anything, you can create the big type 2 error and not think the model accounts for anything. So it's really great if you can be guided by theory. And if you can't be guided by theory, it's nice to be guided by history, looking at those variables that tend to have interactions, that tend to have quadratic terms. Just to sort of give you the whole flavor, I've got what I think of as one of each kind of the interactions that we've looked at. Here's an interaction between 2 binary variables. So job interest is binary, practice difficulty is binary. There's a good old 2x2 interaction in the middle of this whole big regression model. I've got 2 quantitative variables, motivation and practice. If I'm going to carry the complete interaction set, I need the interval, the interval quadratic, the quadratic interval, and the quadratic-quadratic interaction. It takes those four to capture the full set of interactions between practice and motivation. And then the kind of interaction that's really been sort of the centerpiece is interactions between categorical variables and quantitative variables. The full set of those is both the linear interaction and the quadratic interaction. So just a selection of things. Show you one of each. The thing about regression, as you know, is you have to put in all of the terms. Regression doesn't build anything for you. Now, several other things in SPSS do, including logistic regression. If you have a binary outcome variable, you can either build things and put them in, or you've got a design statement like you do in GLM that you can build interaction terms within the model, your choice. Well, we get a whole bunch of variants. It turns out that stats, course, tests are amazingly easy to predict compared to most other things. But you look at this, and it's a little daunting. I mean, there's a lot of numbers there, and a lot of significant effects. And if you walk through that and you articulate what each thing means, no matter how carefully, you're going to lose your reader. You're probably going to lose yourself. Because there's just so many pieces and you're trying to see complicated things that you can't see in any one term. There are some simple ones. For people with the average amount of practice, the average motivation, the average number of prior statistics, who are in the clinical program, who plan to do research and did the same difficulty task, the average performance is 86. Everything is going to be a comparison with that. This tells us, this is about practice. So for people who have the average motivation, the average prior stats, are in the developmental program, plan to do research, and did the same difficulty, each practice gave us a 2.994 increase in performance. But make sure you don't generalize that to anybody else, and you keep in mind that there was a bit of a curve to it, but not enough to be significant. But that sample size, in combination with that p-value, it might be a type 2 error, it might not. This is about as bad as it gets. Somewhere between 1 and 200 and somewhere between 0.1 and 0.3, that's where you really, really can't tell whether you've got a power problem or null. Just saying. That's where it gets fluffy. Between 1 and 200, between 1 and 300, anywhere around in there, and anything between a 0.1 and a 0.3. If you're down around 0.1, it's almost certainly a power problem if you got less than 300 or 400. If you're much over 0.3, it's probably not a power problem, even if you have 200 or 300, or even if you only have 100 or 150. But this is a nasty combination. That is small enough to be intriguing, and that's small enough to be a problem. And really, who wants to have to think about that stuff when I'm staring at all of these every time? You got to worry about every time you reject the null, is it a power problem? So this tells us for people with the average amount of practice, the average motivation, who are in the clinical program, planned to do research and took and did the same difficulty, that each increase in motivation gave us a significant 0.7 increase in performance. And you say to yourself, really, how can I give a shit about 0.7 of a point? But that's each increase on a regular sort of multi-item inventory. Okay? It's not a whole practice. 3 percentage points for a practice, that's kind of cool. This 0.7, it's hard to think of that as meaningful, but there's a lot of them. Okay, that's each 1 point increase in motivation. And remember, motivation had an average of 51 and a standard deviation of 12. So a 1-point increase is an eighth of a standard deviation. The other way you can look at that and say, you know what, I should care about that itty-bitty, teeny-weeny regression weight. Look at that sucking beta. That is the biggest beta in the pile. You can't write off motivation because it has this small raw regression weight. It's a large standard deviation variable. That regression weight is going to be shrunk down, reflecting the scale difference between it and the other predictors. But this is a bad bear. And so is the quadratic part. There's a lot going on with motivation, and it isn't all linear. So while you don't want to tell the story about the model from just this, we're going to do some plottings and some other things, you need to stop and go through it and figure out, okay, what have I found that's really cool and really sexy, as opposed to like practice or prior stats. That's a bigger number than that. That's a bigger number than that, but neither of them are reliable. Okay, that's not really small, and that's awful close. When we look at the program differences, we say, all right, so clinical's not different than experimental, but clinical's different than developmental. But before you say that too loud, you have to remember to say, we're only looking at people with average practice, average motivation, average prior stats who plan to do research and did the same task. This is not a main effect description. This is a simple effect description. You got to hold on to that. That tends to go away. And then we start working our way through the interactions, which, geez, okay, job interest, sorry. Big difference between the people who want to do quant did about 11 points better than the people who wanted to do research, but only for those with average practice, average motivation, average prior stats in the clinical program who did the same difficulty. Then we start getting some interactions. When we look at the job interest and practice difficulty, we get a significant interaction. The simple effect difference between people who did the easy and people who did the same is 10 points. Big simple effect difference. Big interaction. When we look at practice and motivation, we can see that we got neither linear nor quadratic. It's always more believable when you say I don't have an interaction, if you can say I had neither a linear nor a quadratic. When we look at practice and motivation, we see that one of the four is. If we look at just linear, we get nothing. Even if we just look at the quadratic, we get nothing. The only one that shows up is when we're looking at a linear practice quadratic motivation interaction. So the curve of the motivation quadratic interaction, I'll be with you in a second. The curve of the test performance practice interaction changes with motivation. We're going to want to see a picture. Nobody's going to want to explain that from the regression weights. And we see that when we look at practice difficulty and practice, we get a linear but not a quadratic. So this is a more believable linear term because we know it's just linear because we looked at quadratic.
When you mentioned that, keeping all the others, holding all the others at an average value, but you cannot avoid that part of, it has to be in a bunch of,
It has to be simple effects. You can pick what simple effect you're looking at. If, for example, you wanted to say, well, I want to know what this whole thing looks like. I want to tell this story for people who practiced twice.
Right.
Then you go in.
So
you recentered it to, and you recompute any term that includes that. Now, some of that will change, some of it won't. It'll all change in ways that you could logic out and do the math if you bothered, but that's why we have it do that. Okay? And now you're telling a story about people who practiced twice. If you want to tell a story about people who did the easy practice 10 times, were highly motivated, and had never had a stats course before, code it up. You can tell the story for whoever you want. No matter how you tell the story, you get the same story. You're going to get the same plot. Because there's only one model of how these effects relate to test performance as a model. So all we ever change is what part of the model we get explicitly and what part we have to go begging for.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that I keep saying until the light goes on. It's like, oh yeah, shit, you've been saying that. That's what that means. Yeah. And then it goes away, then it comes back. So here I have articulated all of this for you. Because it's nice to read it written down, but I'm not going to read through it with you. So what I started doing is I started saying, okay, what are some cool things that I want to look at? Well, here's practice and performance for easy and similar. And remember that we had an interaction between practice and practice difficulty. And that interaction had some straight and some curve to it. And so that's the story, that you get the traditional sort of diminishing returns to practice with similar difficulty, but you get this decrease. I mean, at first you get almost nothing, so basically this is basically flat, and then it plummets off. Yeah.
Is it possible to draw a complete graph of all the variables?
You sure can, but you're going to go blind. Because you would need to have...
Then it's all a matter of where you're looking at, for example.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you can put a whole model on a graph. Or you can talk about how I can draw this for the people who were in the clinical. I can draw another one for developmental. I can draw another one for experimental. But they're only going to be vertical differences because we haven't included a three-way interaction. So this two-way interaction is only going to differ at different values of other variables vertically. Okay? So that's why you tend to see two-way plots when you only have two-way terms in a model. Three-way plots when you have three-way terms. Because while we're probably interested in where this is, we might not invest the whole graph in showing that it goes up or down. If you want to say that it's different for those three groups, I got to go back and put the three-way interaction, the practice difficulty, practice, and program. Now I've got a minimum of 6 lines to handle somewhere. Because I've got these 2 lines for each of those 3 groups. And whether I put it on 1 graph or 3 graphs, they model. There's a lot behind the apparently similar statement, you can have whatever you want, for whatever you want, you just have to pick. And just try and keep it so that you can explain it to mom and dad. I'm really spoiled. Hey, come on in, jump in here. I'm really spoiled because my wife, before she became a dentist, was a psych major and liked stats and design. And so she, if I can explain something to her, or she can read something that makes sense, it's going to do well at a conference. Because she's got the skill set, but she doesn't know particular variables and things. And so I've got this built-in editor at the house, and boy, is it wonderful. Plus, her English is better than mine. knows labels for things and parsing sentences. You ever notice the people who know a language learn it when they study another foreign language? Because when you're learning your own language, you're not learning how to diagram sentences and all the names. But when you go learn another language, then they start trying to explain it to you. And you go, wait, did we have that? I remember asking several times my Spanish teacher, do we have that in English? And sometimes the answer is no. Because some languages have different constructions. But for the most part, like, yeah, okay, I feel stupid. Fine, I'll go talk to Mr. Coleman and he'll explain it to me. So the one problem we have with this is we sort of got lucky here that this sucker curved off before it hit 100. There was enough quadratic in this that we didn't get any silly numbers. But if this had been candid a little bit more, we might have gotten values more than 100. And that tells us that, you know, we only put in a linear and a quadratic, which means this thing is going to be symmetrical around some point. And that symmetry is model, not data. Down here, this symmetry is model, not data, and so I'm not sure that we actually get an improvement before it falls off. Right? To get from here to here, with a linear, we would have a line. With a quadratic, we're limited to the shape that we can get.
So would you be tempted to try a cubic?
Tempted to throw that cubic in there and see if what this portrays is going on here stands up when it's allowed to have that other inflection point so it comes straight across and drops, or maybe even comes down. But remember, we have limited the complexity of the lines when we set it to a quadratic-only term. And nothing looks really funky here. I mean, you know, these are nulls. And these effects change because this is changing, not because of this. But if this were flatter, then we might get a pattern that didn't really make sense, and we might want to go back and say, all right, you know, if we got what we should have. And that's something that gets forgotten. We have set limits on complexity of the curves. We require there to be a straight part, and we require there to be a symmetrical curve part. If you want an unsymmetrical curve, you need a second inflection point. That's a cubic. And we see so many cubics that really change dramatically that you forget that this is also a cubic term. Okay. It's not just this. Different combinations of linear, cubic, and quadratic give you very different looking cubic things. If we put the linear term only in, or linear and quadratic in only, we may get something as dramatic as that. Yeah. Yes, you can. But not in this model, because there's no way to get back to the error term. Oops. One of the great things about maximum likelihood modeling is you literally have access to more specific error terms. Remember, an error term is supposed to be the effect plus random error. Well, identifying random error in this model is much more difficult, and you literally can't grab pieces the same way. When you do in this model, you're stuck with the old, okay, if I'm going to compare these two, do I use all of this variance or just the variance here? You don't always get the same answer, and you can only do one of them within the model. Which, the one that you can do in the model, is not the one that works the best, which is the overall term. Use everything you can to estimate error. That's the way most maximum likelihood models work. They don't even tell you that anymore. That has become doctrine to the point that many packages don't even let you switch out whether you're using specified or full error models. 20 years ago, truth, love, and beauty was the opposite. Everything was done with specific models. Because within ANOVA, within repeated measures in ANOVA, that was the right math. But it turned out to be the wrong decision matrix. A guy named Jeff Loftus did a lot of that early work in the ANOVA model. Who was? A cognitive psychologist. It's scary the number of times that somebody working in their research area has gotten backed into a statistical corner and turned out to be a mathematical genius. So here's this cool quadratic-y thing. We got practice and motivation. And I forget what terms we have. I'm going to go look. Didn't we have just the linear quadratic? Out of these four... Yeah, we had just the quadratic linear. Okay, so... at x equals 0, these three tangential slopes at this point are not significantly different from each other because there's no linear interaction. Okay? These curves are all pretty similar to each other. What differs is the spacing vertically. So the spacing vertically means that this linear shape changes so that the spacing changes. And that's why we've got, I guess that's the significant term. But this is kind of interesting because at low levels of practice, they line up low, medium, high motivation. At high levels of practice, the average motivated and the most motivated look almost the same. And this, with apologies, is arguing for jacking up the number of practices. Right? Because it's low level of practice, we get a big pairwise comparison here. The most motivated and the average motivated are really different at one practice. But you get up around 7, 8, 9, 10, or even pretty close to the average. You get above, much above 5, and now those average motivation look a whole lot like the most motivated. And that's part of the language that I was taught as a teacher, which is try to find those things that make everybody act like the best do. Motivational remediation. If I practice the averagely motivated enough, they look like the most motivated. That makes that a cool graph.
And again, looking at the curve of the blue line, it's uh-huh. very possible that there might be...
there might be something else going on, yeah. Because this sucker's going to crash.
Right. Because the blue's already started declining. In a way.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So how does one express that in word scale, the linear quadratic interaction? Like, what does it mean when you say that?
What I would do, and I'll tell you, what I do is I give them the regression weights, and I give them the picture, and I describe the picture. And I would literally come in here, and I would talk about performance differences, how we get a pattern here of ABC, we get a pattern here of AB little bit of C, AB little bit of C, from here up we get AB patterns. And that's the way I would tell that story. Along with the basic fact that, look, practice matters. And practice is a remediator of motivation at high enough levels. Huh. Oh, sorry. Remediation is when somebody's not good at something. And so you get them to where they should be. All right? So the way I'm using it is, if I practice you enough, then the average motivated look like the best motivated. Now, at this point, we haven't really figured out what to do with the people who are poorly motivated. The poorly motivated people just don't get as much out of the practice. And practicing them more is better, but not as much better. So we're still trying to figure out what to do for these folks. Because this is below a B on average. We have not found a way to take these folks and elevate them into a passing grade. We got to find something else. The other thing to talk about here is that, you know, it's whenever you got a bunch of variables, you always sort of sort them into two patterns. What are the ones that I can impact? What are my predictors that are causable? And what are my predictors that are only measurable? Practice I can definitely control, or at least try to control. There's always somebody who just doesn't. Motivation is going to be harder because we don't really know. This is a measured motivation. And in the history of the study of motivation, I can tell you that in every species that's been looked at, there's a difference between the motivation you come with and the motivation I try to instill. And so just because we found this, if we did something to try and increase motivation and turn everybody into that group, I don't know that we can. I want to, because I know what happens if you're in this group. I would like to have everybody in this group. But I can't necessarily manipulate everybody into this level. I can manipulate everybody into this. So one of the things you're always looking for are those variables that you can have an impact on, that you can change the predictor score. The cool thing about the GLM that we've been emphasizing is the ability to get particular comparisons among particular groups. So we can go in and say, I want the expected means on this. I want a comparison of my experimental, my developmental, and my clinical. We ask for the compare, and it's going to give me that pairwise comparison of those groups. Notice we didn't specify anything else. So it's going to do it all for the average of all the other variables. If we wanted to do it for two practices, we'd put by, and in parentheses, we'd set up practice equals 2. Motivation equals 6. Line all of that up. The other nice thing is that we can get the plot and the pairwise comparisons for that significant 2x2 that's embedded in the middle of this. Because I haven't written, because it's a pain in the ass, I haven't written the Excel version that plots the categorical by categorical interactions. Because it's a pain in the ass. But you can go get them here. So here we're plotting practice by job interaction. And here we have the pairwise comparisons that go with it. So when we're going to look at that significant interaction, we've got two looks at it. There's all our stuff. There's our plot. And here is the reminder. So this is for people with the average amount of practice, the average number of prior stats, the average motivation. That's what it looks like. And you can see that the people who are planning to do quantitative outperform the people who plan to do research when they're doing both easy practice and hard practice. Here, this is cool. This tells you that the same difficulty practice essentially remediates the job interest difference. Because if I take the people in that are planning to do research, which do poorer on average, but I give them the same difficulty, they come up to the same level as the poorer performance in the other group. That would be known as partial mediation, because I brought it up into the range of performance of the other group. If this sucker came the whole way up here, it'd be called complete remediation. But this tells you that same is really important, and it's even more important for the group planning to go on and do research. You get the effect for the high quantitative, for the people who are intending to do quantitative, which are also the ones that are more motivated to perform well on the test. And so it's really great that just by changing the way I practice them, I get substantial remediation between a variable that I can't mess with. I can't change their job interests. And if I could, it wouldn't matter. You know what I mean? But by changing the way I practice, I can get them up there in the competitive range. Two problems. That's an average of less than 80, and that's an average of less than 80. So you get all excited about the pattern, but we still are not getting to what we need. Now remember, there's other variables that aren't here. This is for the average amount of practice. I would expect that when we add practice, both of these groups are going to move up into an acceptable range. If we can add prior stats, again, that's not really something I can have an impact on. We add motivation. We already complained about that. So I've got one variable. I've got two variables here that I already know are important that I see, again, matter. How much they practice and what kind of practice keeps showing up as important variables. And remember that there's an interaction to them, and it's a complicated interaction. So here's the pairwise comparisons that tell us that for those who are planning to do quant, there's a difference between easy and same practice. And for those who plan to do research, there's a difference between easy and same practice. In other words, what we thought we saw up here, we did.
So then what you could do now is maybe take a higher number of practices and say that, okay, I hypothesize that I'm going to give my students 10 rounds of practices. And then you redo the whole equation, replot the curve, and then see if it's getting close to 100.
Yep.
Okay.
So then you, or at least over 80, yeah.
At least over, right. So you essentially see like kind of compound.
Yeah. Okay. All I do is I come back here, all the way back here, and instead of centering on 5.8, I center on 10. Now remember, when I do that, I'm about to leave interpolation and wander off into extrapolation. Right? Because we got an average for practice. We've got a range from 1 to 10. 10's the most anybody did. So I'm out here where I don't have a lot of sample. I'm out towards the end of my range. It's a little bit dangerous. I don't know that I would go above like 8. Because 8 is a standard deviation and a half away. I'm only talking about 9% of my sample. Let's not go crazy. But if I really want enough, I think, you know, when I look at this model, man, if I can get them up to 12 practices, it looks great. I got to go get more data. I got to go get more data with an average of 8 and a range from 4 to 12. Now I'm in a better position. But those data are going to be expensive. And so I show them this to talk them into that money. Instead of saying, you know, wouldn't 12 be wonderful? Big difference between saying, wouldn't 12 be wonderful, and showing them this and saying, wouldn't 12 be wonderful? Because at this point, there's a lot of curves going on here. I'd like to have enough data that I can really trust my examination of that and that. Because there's some interesting things going on at the right-hand side of that graph. I don't want to stop at 10. I want to see what happens up in 12 and 13. I want to see what's going on at 10. So I got to put 10 more in the middle. So I need 12, 13, 14.
So that you have that as mean value, right? Because yeah. The problem is the farther you move out, the less reliable your results.
Yes.
Okay.
Less data you have, more error you have, more stuff you miss, more stuff you get wrong and miss. Remember, dropping your sample size can screw up everything, not just type 2. That's the three. That's right. We did one of each kind.
Can EM means coding? What if it's basically meeting with a different value? We actually have to subtract it from the mean of that.
Oh, I'll show you. We did that.
Easier. You just put the value.
Yeah, we did that here. That's the regression. Oops, no, I'm sorry. Everything that's cool happens in the 2x. Here. So we said, tell me about, what the hell S and B is? Starters and bench. Tell me about starters and bench. Give me the pairwise comparison on starters and bench with number of sessions held at negative 3, which is really 2, negative 0.28, which is really 5, and 3.7, which is really 9. If we had put another variable in here, we would just specify it there, where we say number of sessions squared, and then if we had different ages, we could put age-centered equals 0. It would be the average age. But we can, you just string these out so that you're specifying exactly what you want. If you don't put a width at all, it does it at the average of everything. And that's what it told us in all that stuff at the bottom of the picture and the bottom of the regression weights.
And the squared value is just the square of this new centered, right?
Yeah, that's all it is. So what I'm going to do is we're going to take homework, the first homework, and I'm going to give you another dependent variable that I built so that there's some interaction terms that contribute to it.
Is the theta sign already off for the first homework?
You know, if you're asking, I assume no.
I mean, I checked about a couple of days back. I dropped you an email.
You did, and I thought, you know. I'm going to put it up. I don't know what happened. I remember sitting in front of it. The safe assign window was open, and then a butterfly went by. I went with it. Yeah, it's going to be another version. It'll have another name. But what we're going to do is take the same variable, so all your codings and stuff you can use again. We're just going to then build some interaction terms. And I'm just going to build a new dependent variable. All I do is I just build a model. I actually build a dependent variable out of the model that I want you to see and add error to it. I don't have that many data. All my good data sets are tied up in my samples. There's none left over for homework. And so, yeah, we crashed those. Simulation, crafting, and making shit up. Understand me? So I'll put that up, bang your head on it until it makes sense. Remember what we talked about, how your regression and your GLM code don't match? In some way, it's my fault. So what you want to do is simplify that model down to the coded variable. Make sure that you can get the same results from ANOVA run by GLM and by regression. Then you know your codes are right and let it get under. Cool. Thanks a bunch. It's a lot easier the second time, isn't it? It's just you don't get this shit the first time. You're not going to really understand any of it until you've done it a couple dozen times. This is the end of the 3-week march, the 3-week session. Yeah. We're going to do just the first 2 weeks of the first 5-week session. This stuff, you guys are moving into the land where saying it 7 or 8 more times doesn't do much. You got to go home and roll around it and figure it out. Here on in, that's the hours you put in. Well, you start to move.
I'm talking the fourth module, which is the advanced tutorial. I think I wrote down.
At one point, it was going to, but only for like a day and a half. Everything has changed. I have to be out of town.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the schedule says 8th, and I will email everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, it is the 8th, because that third week out, so we're not out of town. Yes. That's an amazingly dirty screen. Yeah, it says 8 for both, but I will send that out. So I'm leaving the 19th, and hopefully we're still playing ball in the middle of the next week. Taking the U19 Nebraska soccer team to the region. At one point I was going to give us a week off, but that would have meant a week off, a week off, and a week. With only a week then left in the 5-week session to sort of finish things up. And so I pushed you through this, so you're done with me before I leave you. I like this class, because that's right there if you want to look. So the freeways are just this. We've got a whole nother Excel program just for kinds of freeways. The good news is there aren't that many kinds of freeways. 2x2x2, 2x3x2, 2x3x2, 3x3x2. I got a 3x3x2 somewhere if you need it. And again, we don't use a computator for a regular factorial. Just get all that stuff out of SPSS and we'll show you that stuff. And then the advanced factorial is for people who know that they're going to be doing a lot of racing with elders. That is a big deal. Starting with one. So we redo interactions again. We really come to factorial ANOVA. Then we look at ANCOVA. Factorial ANCOVA. You already know these models. Okay? This is basically a 2x2. This is a 2x2x2. This could be a 2x2x2. And then we look at MANCOVA, factorial ANCOVA. And you'll actually see some of the data the second time, but it gets analyzed differently because if you go after a 2x2x2, with your main focus being that Q variable, you want to know how that relationship changes in the different groups. Then you end up plotting four lines. But if you go into a 2x2x Q thinking it's a 2x2 with a covariate, then what you really care about is how the interaction pattern of the 2x2 changes at values of that quantitative variable. So you show a series of 2x2 graphs, or I should say tables. So the same damn model gets follow-up analysis that are different and tuned to why you have that model. Is it a factorial with controls? Or is it a quantitative relationship at different values of other variables? The model doesn't care, but the statistical package does because of what it's going to show you. So, more of the same stuff. The idea is to show you all the different versions of all the same stuff. And that's what we'll do together on Monday. We'll be back to probably all of the 2-hour sessions as we start those. But then towards the end again, because you know I like to carve things up. I would rather carve things up and start over another time with a new topic and stuff things into a 2-hour session that don't really go anywhere. Especially when you have I can jump your feet. I don't know all kinds of fun stuff. You have to sit down. Have a good weekend. I hope it doesn't rain on the entire weekend.
If you're coming out, you know, there's a picture in here. Blackboard. Yes, that's what
you
I
do. Everything that.
Yeah.
Do that once already?
I already.
Do it again. Do it again. Just resend it and we'll see if I can't get it right this time.
I want
to
find it. So next week I go to the TV, so I'll come like 2 hours.
That'd be great. Anytime I can help you.
Thank you so much.
Bye. This motherfucker. Hey you, what's up?
I have another question.
You can have all you want.
I'm not registered for your for the multivariate.
Uh-huh.
And that's okay. I just wondered, do you mind if I just come and sit and listen to
you? Oh, you can come in on anything you want.
That's okay with
always,
you?
Yeah. Just hold on a second and I'll register you.
Oh, I don't have to be registered because I can only take 6 hours this summer.
No. Just register you with Blackboard so you can...
Oh,
so
okay.
If you want to turn something... Of course, if you want to turn something, you can just email it to me.
No, it's okay. Whatever works best. I just didn't know if...
No, this will work fine. It's just... In most courses, there's stuff on Blackboard that isn't... You can't get other work, like pink things and blue things. But not in the summer. So you can get to the webpage. You can get to everything. We're good.
Okay. And it's alright. You're
always welcome. Everybody's always welcome.
I just wanted to make
They can
sure.
make their own money however they want.
Some people are like...
Yeah, well. Screw them.
You're my hero, Cal.
Just keep
share?
Asking questions. You're getting much better at this. You're starting to relax again.
I haven't started working through any of the homeworks.
You
so
will, and you'll ask questions, and we'll have
more.
A blast.
Thank you.
Sure.
You want this shut?
If you would, please.